Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey guys, we're joined by Scotty James. If you don't know that name, you're wrong. Olympic medalist, world champion, snowboarder, even more so, highly successful entrepreneur, philanthropist, and we'll dive in. First off, how's fatherhood treating you?
Fatherhood is amazing. Probably the best new challenge in my life ever. Been adapting and, you know, I always, honestly, when people would tell me, you know, make sure you get your sleep before you become a dad, I would always kind of blow it off and be like, can't be that bad. No, it is that bad. So no, it's been incredible. And, he's just an amazing little guy and yeah, super happy and thrilled. It's incredible.
Yeah. I don't think anyone can predict the sleep, dude. It was, I served in the military for 20 years, sleep deprivation environment. I'm 46, about to turn 47. I'm like, yeah, I got this. Total overstatement. I'm hurting, dude. I haven't worked out in like a month.
I can imagine in the military, you probably had many stressful, like sleepless nights as well. So,
yeah, but you're in your 20s.
I guess I can relate on that one.
there is like a moment when your child's born, what's changed for you?
You know, what's changed the most, I would say, if I'm honest, I was pretty nervous to have kids because, I obviously in a pretty risky sport, most days is relatively terrifying. And there's moments when, it can be quite a challenge in terms of, you know, being fearful about hurting myself and things like that. So I was always pretty timid about having children because you know almost need to be able to overcome that fear and just like push past it and deal with it. So I thought that maybe if I had a child that would make me even more nervous because you know I have a lot more to live for in that case. It sounds really grim, but it's true. I've got something more now in my life that I want to get home to, I guess. So have an amazing wife and a great marriage. So I had plenty to get home to before, but I'm just saying it's kind of like made me realize that, yeah, wow, it's thinking about those things. But what's probably changed the most is it's been more positive, honestly. I've been incredibly more efficient, more productive on the mountain. Yeah. Time is really valuable. And it's helped me in sport, I think, realize how great it is what I get to do every day. But then also that it's, you know, I'm on a timeline. I've got 3 days here. So let's get work done so I can go home and see him. So that's probably a more efficient, I would say, for sure.
You are the favored gold medalist for the 2026 Winter Games. Do you think your son and the birth of your son will propel you to actually push harder?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. For sure. I think it's given me, you know, productivity on the mountain. It's something that sometimes you can go up and go through the motions and tick boxes, put it that way. And then you never really, as people would say, it's that more quantity over quality. Whereas I find now there's so much quality when I'm training on the mountain that I think that's really important, particularly in this part of my career. You know, I'm 30 years old, but I still feel really fresh. I'm still really competitive. But it's just nice that, as we obviously approach in the 2026 Olympics, it gets really important to make sure that there's a lot of quality on the mountain and training is really impactful every time I do it. So I do think that it's a really great value add. And then obviously, hopefully when we get it done, it's cool to be able to share that experience with him and the family. So yeah, it'd be amazing.
You know, as the projected gold medalist, I could see both benefits. One, it's an accolade people are giving you because you're the best in the world right now. But that's also a lot of pressure. It's almost like it's yours to lose. How do you sort of deal with that compliment where people say you are the projected gold medalist?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a big pill to swallow for sure. And I think it's probably for me, I put a lot of pressure on myself in general with competition. But yeah, I mean, it is the only competition I haven't won yet. So it's like, I've been fortunate enough to stand on the podium in every other big major event in my respective field. So yeah, it'd be incredible to tick that off. But, you know, and it's super cliche as well for me to sit here and say like, oh, regardless, you know, I just want to go out and give it my best shot. I want to honestly, like that's call a spade a spade. So I'll give it my best shot and do everything that I can to make that happen. And, you know, I've had obviously plenty of experience. This is going to be my fifth Olympics, which is incredible representing my country. And yeah, most importantly, I've learned from the previous ones about why maybe it didn't work out before. So I know now I'm going to leave no stone unturned and hopefully make it a reality.
So, you know, thank you for not giving the Hallmark answer of you just said it. You said the words, and if people didn't hear that, he said, I want to fucking win.
Yeah.
Word with.
That's very true.
That's the truth. Like, why would you go in any other freaking way?
Yeah.
You know, I do want to go back to your history because you competed in your first Olympic Games as the youngest Australian athlete ever at 15. You broke your wrist during warm-ups, but continued to compete. And still, you finished 21st in the world. So Australia's not exactly all that well-known for the Winter Games. I mean, they produce some good athletes, but... most of your training was done in the U.S. and Canada, if I read that correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So when I was younger, I spent a lot of time in the U.S. and in Canada. And honestly, my parents were always, big shout out to them and respect. They were just trying to put me where the toughest competition was, pretty much, because they knew that was the best way for me to excel was being exposed to the kids that lived it every single day. So we did that. We would pretty well moved over to the US kind of like 5 months of the year or so, maybe a little less than that. But yeah, so we were always exposed to kind of the best kids in the world at a pretty young age, as of about 11. So that was like such a really good eye-opening experience for me. And, you know, because I think being from Australia, it's very... not easy, but it's relatively less of a challenge, let's say, than to be domestically the best. And, you know, my parents were always realistic. They're like, okay, if everyone says you have as much talent as you do, the best way to figure that out is let's go and put you in, a habitat where the kids are the best and see how you come out the other side. And I ended up doing quite well. So that was cool. That was, here I am now.
So as I read your life, you started snowboarding at, was it 5 or 6?
Yeah. So my first memory, I can't actually remember. I was quite young. I would have been like 3 or 4 years old. And I just wasn't a very obedient child in general. So my parents put me in ski school and I didn't listen to the instructors. Didn't listen to the instructors and they put me on a snowboard to slow me down. And, yeah, that worked initially, put me on my ass for a bit. And then after maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, I'd figured it out as well. So yeah, started really young.
But you loved it. Your parents didn't push it. You loved it.
No, I loved it. I've always, if I'm honest, I actually thought I was going to get into like motocross or something like that. I thought I was going to get into motocross because my dad's super passionate about it. He used to race 250s on track and that was like his passion. And I rode motorbikes a lot. So naturally I thought that was where I was probably going to end up. But yeah, dad never my family never really pushed any sport on me. I kind of always had a knack for those kind of extreme sports and I love them. I love being upside down and naturally being upside down and being on a snowboard went hand in hand for me, and here I am.
Do you still ride?
Yeah, ride a lot. Yeah, I just
motocross.
Yeah, not motocross. Do more enduro riding. I just got a new bike recently back in May. So yeah, I still really enjoy it. And it's something Dad and I do together. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
What's the longest ride you guys have done together? How many days? How the distance?
Distance wise, I don't know. Probably a couple hundred kilometers. But we typically go away, go camping, and we usually go for 3 days, and we go a ride all around the high country of Victoria. And yeah, absolutely love it. Like it's incredible, and just having a campfire and everything. So my dad does a lot of adventure riding still. He has a 1200 BMW, and he's well toured Australia and everything like that now. And I think he's going to start doing Europe. So yeah, honestly, if you had to ask like my mom or most of my family, they probably said I would have ended up on a motorbike, but yeah, ended up on a snowboard, completely different.
So if you're over in North America for 5 months out of the year, I've got to assume you were homeschooled?
Yes. So I was homeschooled. My school were amazing. And I still stay in touch with them now, Southwood Grammar. And my principal still stay in touch with him. They were always, really, I guess, accepting of what I wanted to do in my life. And, you know, we still have A4 sheets of paper that are really funny of, classic, like grade 4 or 5 at school. And it asks you that question, like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, I either want to be like professional snowboarder or an action sports person. So I just loved everything action sport, motocross, BMX, skateboarding. Like, it didn't matter. I just loved it. And they were always really encouraging of that, which is incredible. So I took all my curriculum away with me, and I still went to school when I was back in Australia. And then, yeah, I'd have tutors around the world, and my mum would come with me when I was really young.
Yeah, the X Games, I still remember the 90s when it came to its inception. We just, like, kids gravitated to it. What do they call it? Esports? Different generation. I know.
Different generation.
I think I love the X Games so much because I was in awe of what those people can do in their respective sports, because you put me on a skateboard and I grew up in California. Fell on my ass within 5 seconds, man. We still did it. I just sucked really, really bad. we all have our niches. As you get into the Olympics at 15, what did that feel like? Was it a complete blur? Were you overwhelmed, or were you just 15 where you're sort of naive to the world and you're like, fuck it?
Yeah, I was pretty, I don't think I really understood what I knew it was a big deal because of the effort it took to get there, and the time that my parents had put into helping me achieve that dream. But then when I was there, I think that's when it really hit me that, like, how incredible it is to represent your country and be there on such a big stage. And even still, I reflect on it and I'm being like, wow, you know, to be 15, walk into opening ceremony is quite a cool thing. So I still have moments, pinch me moments about that. But yeah, I mean, the Olympics is pretty amazing. I think it's the wearing the colors and things too. Like you wear a uniform, you know, we don't typically do that other than the Olympics. So it's all those additions that makes it a little bit overwhelming and exciting and everything in between, which is cool.
Yeah. That's pretty insane. You've won countless gold medals at the X Games. You're going to overtake a lot of Shaun White's records, who we've had on the podcast. Are you friends with Shaun? Are you guys?
Who's that?
There's the humor. There's the Scotty James humor. And if you guys don't follow Scotty on Instagram, he puts out some pretty funny content. Are you guys acquaintances?
Yeah, no, I texted him the other day. I said, congrats on getting engaged. So he's come to the club. Obviously I have huge respect for Sean. It's been, you know, the what he's achieved in the sport has been amazing. He's always been obviously the benchmark for you know, half pipe snowboarding. And yeah, it's funny, last year, if I'm honest, I guess I've always been very, yeah, I've always wanted to just do really well at X Games. It's our biggest event on the annual calendar, and I think it's the most credible event absolutely within our world. So, you know, someone kind of said it to me last year, like, oh, you're getting close to kind of equaling Sean in the medal tally, and but also like equaling him in gold medals. And if I'm honest, I was like, wow, that's pretty damn cool. And I wasn't really aware of the number. I know he's got a lot of medals between slopestyle and halfpipe, but specifically in halfpipe, you know, he's always been considered the one. So to be, yeah, close and edging in on sharing the same amount of medals and potentially same amount of gold medals is amazing, and something that, you know, I guess I never really would have dreamt of happening. So, yeah, I think it's funny, like the relationship with Sean, obviously when I was very young, he was always someone I looked up to. And then there kind of has to become a point where you go into a men's competition and you're going against him, which I did, like more as a competitor, I would say. And like back in the 2016, 2017, you kind of have to, like, he has to stop being your hero anymore, because in the competitive environment, you can only show really your competitors so much. I don't want to say respect, it's probably not the right way, but you know, you kind of have to realize that you can beat them. Whereas if you're just putting people on a pedestal the whole time, it's very hard to like get that edge to get over them in a competition environment. So yeah, it was a funny transition, but yeah, no, it's really cool. And yeah, hopefully I get it done in January.
You will. And you know, my co-host, who was 10 years in the NFL, we've talked about this. It's, we have a concept of kill your heroes. Like, don't put anyone on. The only people we put on the pedestal are those who are dead, like Teddy Roosevelt or guys that died in the war. It's one thing to have respect for people and try to emulate them in certain ways. But I mean, as you overcome him, and you become the benchmark, do you eventually want to see future riders come and break your benchmarks and raise that bar? Or does your ego come in and be like, no, I want to be the one forever?
Yeah, I mean, naturally, when you accomplish something like that, you want to hold on to it as long as you can. But I mean, as they say, records are made to be broken. So I don't think I'm necessarily got a massive ego about the I guess the medal tally. Absolutely, I want to do it, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I think it's probably more what I leave in snowboarding. Like, I definitely want to be someone that's revolutionized the sport in some way or another, or brought something to the table where if someone does a certain trick, for example, like I would like to be the one that originated that trick. And that kind of stuff I find really lives on. Like, so for me, I have a lot of purpose behind that. That gives me a lot of why every day about what I'm doing.
Has it hit home for you? Cause I know when you're a high performer, your level, you don't always have time to reflect until it's freaking over, until the career's over and you move on to something else. I mean, does it hit home that you're already there? You've already revolutionized the sport? Or is that just like, no, I don't want that status quo. I've got years left.
No, I think my team and my family is always very good at checking me and making sure that I realized, you know, what we've done to date. I'm probably a bit more of a keep the head down, keep going. I definitely enjoy it. Like, I don't, you know, I think it's been something that I've learned a little bit more later in my career, is that, you know, my dad in his field respectively did really well. But I think, like, looking at the way that he did everything he did, he had a lot of grit, a lot of grind, a lot of, like, you know, getting things done, which is and kind of lives in that mindset, which I think is incredible. And that's how he did what he did. But I do think, for me, particularly in sport, I do have that. I picked up that trait. So for me, relaxing is hard. I really struggle to have a downtime because I'm always thinking about how to get an edge on my competitors and what they're doing and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I think, yeah, I'm trying to evolve and find a different way to be better every year. And yeah, my family's always pretty good at saying, hey, like, it's been amazing and it will continue to be amazing, but it's really important to reflect on the journey so far. And yeah. I do for 5 minutes and then I'm like, all right, fucking back to it.
So what you're talking about is, I mean, the Everyday Warriors, we just interview high performers.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Unhealthiness to what you just like described, because like you find the high performers, they just got to keep moving, which is required to stay at the top of your sport. But that also, from a burnout perspective, takes a toll. Do you ever feel that burnout towards the end of a X game season or any other competition?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel it often. Actually, I wouldn't say burnout. Burnout, mental and not as much physical, but more mental. That intensity, like all the time, can be relatively wearing after long enough. But I do, you know, I have someone that really helps me, like a bit of a mentor, someone who keeps me in check about, you know, just making sure I'm staying present and enjoying everything that I'm doing. But yeah, I would say sometimes it's an interesting one where even for myself, I try and explain how I'm feeling. And some people, I think I realized that not everyone really might understand what I'm trying to do, or they don't understand maybe the intensity it takes to get there. And that also might be like naive of me to say as well, because a lot of people have lived their own journeys and whatever else, and they had their own adversity as well. But I think sometimes like I feel misunderstood because it takes a lot and like being, you almost have to be like obsessed by it. And I think I am. And I'm probably obsessed by many different things in my sport, like that I'm trying to accomplish. And, you know, particularly at this moment in time, it would be, you know, how do I continue to win? Because it gets obviously harder every single year. There's younger people coming up, et cetera. So, yeah, I guess that's where I live a lot of the time. And, yeah, I'm not sure if that really answers the question.
You know what? What you just said what you said was beautiful, because there's a reality. And again, I'm not taking away from other people. I'm not. Mm. Everyone has their journey. They have their adversities. You just said it. But when you're up here on the peak, you have basically no one to turn to give you the advice other than guys who have been the top of their game that understand it. And those are few and far between. So in a lot of ways, I mean, it's a lonely place to be where you're at. Because there are very few people, to include myself, that can't even empathize or grasp what you're dealing with at that level. That's insane.
Yeah. So it's and I think there's a relative like softness to that as well, like wanting to for people to understand. And that's okay. Like, I'm a pretty vulnerable person. I cry often. Like, I'm not saying not to be vulnerable, but I think sometimes I seek the answer that maybe I know I'm not necessarily going to get it. But, and then I kind of go back to what I'm doing because I know that it works, and sometimes it's not always comfortable, but yeah, I think I've learned that a lot. I think sometimes there's a perception of people up top for a long time that just have it all figured out. If anything, they're probably, yeah, even a little bit more unbalanced necessarily sometimes than it's portrayed.
So we had a past guest, again, NFL player, Hall of Famer, Terrell Davis. And I asked him about balance, and he basically said, balance. There is no fucking balance when you do excellence. And I'm like, okay, yeah, he's right. He's right in a lot of ways. But Scotty, I want to switch, because not only do you have the burden of staying on the top, especially with projected gold medal, you're not one of those athletes just that focuses on their game. I'm not saying you do, but you also have a lot of other shit on your plate. Yeah. I believe it's 11 Oakland is your... Yeah. Your firm, you're a strategic business advisor for the X Games. And I love this. I wanted to talk about this. So you're looking out for all the other athletes who it's tough to sometimes between sponsorships that may not pay that much, but you're creating a team series within the X Games. I don't know if you follow professional bull riding, PBR. They just did the same thing, team series, and it's been wildly successful. What was a solo or individual sport. What sort of drove that, that concept, and why did you sort of, you know, grasp onto that and try to drive that to inception?
Yeah, no, it's been really, honestly, very, eye-opening and fun to work on. If I'm honest, I didn't have too much experience in this, in the league format, let's say, but, you know, I think the great thing about this and bringing it into the action sports world is it's a model that's proven. You just use PBR as a example. So if we can get the foundation right, we believe that it will have a really great, long-lasting, sustainable impact on the industry, which is needed at this point in time. Action sports is such an amazing business, but it's been relatively challenging, let's say, in the past almost decade now, just from commercial dollars and interest and viewership and etc. List goes on, but the interest is still there. Like, there's so many people that love it. I love it, obviously. So I think it's trying to bridge the gap between new audience, existing audience, and trying to have people understand the sport a lot better. And it is something that hasn't been done. This kind of league idea with teams and ownership and team ownership, etc. But I do think it is time now to really evolve and shake up in a big way from doing something like this. So yeah, it's been really fun to work on it. It's still growing in the present moment, thinking about how, you know, it works with the athletes. And my role's been, yeah, really enjoyable. I think I, as much as obviously still being a very driven athlete, it's also kind of opened my eyes up a little bit to communicate with other athletes when I can, and understand where they think X Games can be better and what we can be pushing, whether it be formats, whether it be courses, whatever it is, and then bringing that back into the core business. So that's been really enjoyable for me to try and create that impact. And overall, just from a general business perspective, it's been amazing to learn. You know, MSB Sports Capital are incredible private equity business, so the majority stakeholders in the company. And I've always had a really keen interest in investment in general, but this was really great opportunity to get involved in a business that's been my life. So as much as it's been a huge part of my life, I feel like I know a lot about it. I've never really understood the back end of how to run a business such as X Games, for example. So every single day, I'm always hearing new terminology and different ways that things can happen and all that. So it's keeping me really engaged and learning more about an industry that I love. And yeah, and excitingly, you know, hopefully really make some big waves, and I think we will. And it's just the start. So it's been a lot of fun to do. And yeah, 2026, we're going to be launching the league, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. How are the teams divided? Is it going to be by nationality, or is it just going to be like a draft?
And they're so separate? So all the athletes will go into a drafting pool. And then the teams will actually be owned individually, similar to like an F1 model or like it's going to be private ownership, and, you know, people come in, purchase teams and start drafting athletes to have them on the team. And there's obviously, again, similar to most, or not every sport, but like, let's use F1 as an example, there's still that personal endeavor. So in my case, I still win the half pipe. I get that accolade, I get the trophy, you can make the prize money. But then you're also accumulating points, and then additionally you'll be earning a fee from the team. So it's just really enhancing, I guess, the general ecosystem for growth for athletes, but then also business and commercial revenue long term. So I think it's exciting. Again, it's a great challenge to take on. It is completely different, but I do think it'll be adapted really well once people have a proper understanding about what we're doing.
You gonna take some ownership in the team?
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe. No, but I hope I get picked on a damn team. I mean, it's gonna be pretty tough. It's getting hard out there. So the drafting process will be fun. And so all the athletes will go into it, and fingers crossed.
I love the false humility. You know, you're going to get selected. You know, you're going to be the team captain. But okay, right on. I do want to transition. We talked about Sean White. The one thing Sean White does not have that you have in spades, which I consider beyond your world-class skills, is humor. Where did the humor, and I'm talking about your social media, is freaking hilarious, and the parodies you do, is that a family thing? Is that a family trait? And where does that come from? And do you consider optimism and humor one of your sort of superpowers?
I think humor is humility.
Yeah.
I just think it's so important to be able to laugh at yourself. Like, I never take myself. The only time I take myself extremely seriously is probably that hour training, and then the 1:30, which is three runs of competition. Other than that, I try and have a bit of a laugh at myself, and I think that's really important. But if you ask my family, and most extended family, they would all say that my brother Sean and Tim are super, super funny and ha ha ha. And Scott's like, yeah, whatever. So I would say that the boys, my brothers, really help me, especially with the content stuff. I work with my brothers. Tim's my manager, and Sean runs all of my digital content. So I do ideate a lot of different ideas. I come up with things, but then execution, they can definitely try and help me with how to do them. But we have a lot of fun and we really enjoy it. And again, I think it's, for me, it's just important to have a laugh at myself. And I don't know, nowadays it's funny, social media is just, it's relatively just fake, I think. So my interpretation has always been, I hope that I'm the same person in the street as you see me on social media, because I wouldn't want there to be any blurred lines there. It's just how it is.
Yeah, dude, I will wholeheartedly agree with you there. Social media, it's BS. And I always tell my wife, like, let's wait until we have a drop dead fight, like just full out fight, to get the phone out to film that and push that out, rather than how much we love each other, which we do. But if you guys haven't seen Scotty's material, go to his Instagram. Do you have TikTok as well?
Yeah, we got TikTok. Yeah.
Okay. Go to TikTok, Instagram. You'll see his parodies, which are quite great.
We just filmed a new one. It's going out. It's about dadding. So
Now you got new material. On the topic of dadding, Mookie and the Big Scary, which is a children's book you've released, and volume 2 is close behind.
Uh-huh.
Did that idea come up post pregnancy announcement? or was this in the works before your wife Chloe ever got pregnant?
Well, it was all part of the marketing strategy.
We'll play.
It was share the kids book, then we'll start working on the baby, and then when he comes, we promote the book, you know? See, it's all
ruthless.
That we all work together here. So I started working on Mookie versus the Big Scary, which is an incredible opportunity. I've always loved animation movies. And I've always really enjoyed children's films because there's always these Easter egg kind of like learning moments through children's films. If you pay attention, you're like, oh, I do that. Like, or I could do that. And so I really like that. I think that's really cool. Now, obviously, as a parent, but also as an adult, to tune in on those things. So, we created Mookie. Mookie is my nickname. My dad's always called me that for as long as I can remember, and my family still call me Mookie. And Mookie is a little character that we created. And basically, the inspiration was I felt like I wanted to tell maybe a bit of my story, but through this identity that is Mookie, it's my alter ego, as we would say. And it's been really enjoyable to tell my journey and I guess my moments of adversity,
yeah,
or things that I feel like I've done in my life, but also found a lot of humor in those moments as well, and then tried to relay that into the book, which was really enjoyable. I loved working with the illustrator and the writer on the creative side, which was fun. And yeah, it's been amazing. We have the second book coming out this December. It's Mookie versus the Terrible Toys. So hold your seats, crazy one. it's been amazing. And I think of all things that I've ever done, being an author, I think is probably the last. So it's been amazing to keep my eyes open in my career, and you just never know what can happen. So it's been amazing.
First author in your family?
First one.
Wait, yep. Would your family members have guessed that?
Absolutely not. No. When they watch me do my creative writing sessions and generally anything academic when I was growing up, I think author would have definitely been well down there somewhere on the ladder.
That's usually the case. For everyone listening, Mookie and the Big Scary, of course, we always say it's anywhere books are sold, but it's also on Amazon, which I know most people use. Before we even started this podcast, I gave accolades to Scotty because the illustrations and the way the copyright is all laid out is unique. It's interactive. It's I'm like, my book sucks now after I looked at it. I'll take that as a compliment. But go check it out. Again, these books that sort of relay attributes, leadership principles, characteristics that can arm your children, that has just so much impact and given you reach. I hope that thing is a massive bestseller to get in the hands of parents and caregivers to have conversations with their kids.
Yeah, we're hoping the same thing. And most importantly, they enjoy it and hopefully take something away from it, learn something, which should be a huge accomplishment for me, I would say.
So as we wrap up, what's next on the I'd say near horizon? We know we've got the 2026 games, but that's roughly 2 years away. What's the next big challenge for you, competition wise or either life wise?
Next big challenge is probably the diaper I gotta change in 45 minutes. So that's in the nearest future. And then I've got my season coming up soon. So first event is in China, beginning of December, and then I go into the round two in the US. So yeah, it's fast approaching. Head to Austria this weekend to get my kind of last final touches ready for the year. And yeah, and then we get stuck into it and have a really good competitive season, then hit the off season around April, and then we get ready obviously for the year after that. So in the short term, lots to do, which is going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to the year and competing again. And
man, especially in the wake of having a kid, that's a long season. Are they going to travel with you a bit, or are you just going to be on the road?
Yeah, it was funny, you know. Even when I had him, it was a Thursday, and, you know, it was the training and started on the glacier in Switzerland. And yeah, I feel bad telling the story, but I guess this goes back to what I was saying before as being a little bit, the following Tuesday I was in the glacier because I was like, I need to go and train because I was like, don't want people to beat me. And that was just, and it's shocking because I remember going up there and people being like, wow, you're here. And I couldn't tell whether or not they were like, wow, you're here. Like, kind of hoped you weren't going to be here, or wow, you're here. Like, shouldn't you be at home? Cause you just had a baby like 4 days ago. So, I couldn't quite read between the lines there of what that meant. But then after that, I was like, oh shit. Like, I did come and go pretty soon to the glacier. So anyway, I only went for 2 days and I came home, but, yeah, the family will travel with me this season, and which will be amazing. So I'll have Chloe and Leo on the road, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to sharing hopefully some great moments. And yeah, then I think the good thing is, I mean, Chloe's always been great at it, the tough moments they make it better. So it's, yeah, it's gonna be a fun journey this year, and again, something new for me to adapt to, such as going away 4 days after, you know, I didn't, you don't know, I'm always learning, probably the wrong thing to do, I know now.
It depends on who's looking at it. It depends on who's looking at it.
As long as I learn.
Well, dude, Scotty, you know, one, followed you for quite a while. Thank you for coming on the podcast, man. Exceptional work you're doing. I wish you the best in this upcoming season. Congrats, one, on Leo. That's the most important thing. And congrats to Coria as well. But Mookie and the Big Scary, congrats, man. We will push that. And if you ever need anything from us here at the Everyday Warrior Nation or Sports Illustrated, let us know.
I love it. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
All right, brother. And for everyone else, this has been another episode. We'll see you again.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.